Don't you love a good plot twist? I sure do. The best movies and TV shows always have that moment that leaves you going, "Whoa! I did not see that coming." When I was in high school and college, one of the directors who was the very best at creating those kinds of moments was M. Night Shyamalan. Two films in particular do this better than just about any other show I've seen, and I think I can talk about these because they've been out long enough you've either seen them or you're not going to see them. The first, and more famous of the two, is The Sixth Sense with Bruce Willis and Haley Joel Osment. Osment plays a young boy with the ability to see and interact with people who've died. Willis plays a therapist who's trying to help him work through the natural fear and emotions of his unique ability. Now, the movie is filled with moments of just heart-stopping suspense as Osment's character navigates his frightening world. But the real whoa moment comes right at the end after Willis helps Osment figure out that the various dead people are coming to him to help them resolve some unresolved tension from before their death, and that with his help they can find peace and will leave him alone. The climax comes as we realize that Willis was one of those dead people all along who would come to Osment for help. The moment is so jarring, people still talk about it almost 20 years later. The other film, The Village, it's worth mentioning because even though it didn't receive as much acclaim as The Sixth Sense, the moment is just as jarring, and it's special to me. It was the first movie Lisa and I ever saw together, just after we figured out we had feelings for each other, but before we had our DTR talk. That's define the relationship talk, if you're not accustomed to the new lingo. I'm not really, I just used it. Anyway, in The Village, we are invited into the terrifying lives of the villagers of a 19th century New England community that exists in the middle of the woods, which are the stomping grounds of a creature that hunts in the night. As long as they don't venture far into the woods and stay completely out of them at night, the monster leaves them alone. When a young man who's the love interest of one of the village elder's blind daughter is grievously wounded, the elder reveals to her that the monsters are just costumes used by the elders to keep people from leaving the village, and sends her on her way to get the supplies needed to save the young man's life. We think that's the shock. It's not. After surviving a harrowing journey through the woods, the daughter finds and scales a wall where she is greeted by a young park ranger who stopped his SUV upon seeing her. The village, you see, is not a 19th century one at all. It's a haven for some wealthy people who've experienced some tragedy in their lives to live cut off from the modern world in order to hide from its pains, as well as to protect their unwitting children from them. Dramatic plot twists like this make for great storytelling. They do not, however, make for much fun in real life. In real life, we generally like to have everything planned out all nicely and neatly. We have a story arc we're living in. We prefer it to stick to the script. Unplanned departures usually mean pain and hardship for which we may not have appropriately planned. Given our druthers, I suspect most of us would just prefer to leave those kinds of experiences safely up on the big screen. And yet, life still happens. Our plans are nice, but they don't have any bearing on what actually unfolds as we move forward. Even when we're committed to walking forward on the path of Christ, life still brings twists and turns that can leave even the strongest stomachs reeling. Well, this morning finds us in the third and final part of our series, The Characters of Christmas. All this month we've been examining the various familiar faces of the story of Jesus' birth. The reason for this is that if we're not careful, we can get so accustomed to hearing the beloved tale told that we forget all about the fact that it's more than just a nostalgia-filled story. It's a real story about real people wading through the ups and downs of real life. It was messy and uncomfortable and tremendously hard, but in the middle of all the chaos, God stepped into our world. In the baby Jesus. And if he could step into that mess and bring redemption to the world, then he can step into our stories too and bring that same redemption to our lives, no matter how messy they may seem. Well, we started this journey with the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth, the parents of John the Baptist. We learned that even when life gets hard, decades of barrenness was their particular encounter with life's hard, if we'll remain faithful to the commands of God, we will experience the wonder of his promises. A life of faith is a life of promise. And the next character we're introduced to in the story is Mary, Jesus' mother. We looked at some of her story last week when the angel dropped the news on Mary's lap that she was going to be the mother of the Messiah, a turn of events that would have completely turned her life upside down. her response was that she was the Lord's servant. She would go along with whatever it was he wanted to do in and through her. We spent some time reflecting on what exactly it means to be a servant of the Lord. At the end of the day, being a servant of the Lord means being open to his plans. Those plans are for our good, even when they're hard at first. Well, this morning, I want to look with you at Jesus' earthly dad, Joseph. Joseph, he usually gets overlooked in the Christmas story. I mean, he was just some guy in the manger, right? And our Little People brand nativity said it's actually kind of hard to tell which little figure is Joseph and which one is a shepherd. It kind of go either way. Now, Mary gets decked out in beautiful blue whenever she's pictured, but Joseph, he was just kind of there. And yet, his role in the birth of Jesus was incredibly significant. Had he not played his part to the letter, the whole thing would have fallen apart. And the thing is, he had every reason to give up and go home almost from the moment he appears in the drop. Let's take a look at this together. I want to focus our attention on Matthew's recounting of Jesus' birth in Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 to 25. But before we get there, take a minute and just put yourself in Joseph's shoes. You know, you've learned a trade from your father, carpentry. Probably a family business. There weren't many other kinds of businesses back then. Well, work in Nazareth was, you know, fairly steady. He wasn't setting the world on fire by any means. He was poor, but life was moving forward according to plan. You know, his father had worked out his betrothal to a young woman named Mary, and he quietly had his eye on her for some time and was thrilled to be able to call her his wife in just a few short months. Everything was on track for a quiet, happy life that he'd always wanted. And then this. Now, the birth of Jesus Christ took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. Now, come on. You're a good guy. You've lived rightly your whole life. I mean, you're not perfect, but you've, you know, consistently made your best effort to follow the law and offer the appropriate sacrifices when you've blown it. You've gotten engaged. Wasn't really an engagement the way we imagine that concept, but it's the closest thing we have to what a betrothal was, so we'll just use that word for now. But you've been engaged to a great young girl who you thought was right on the same page with you, and then she tells you she's pregnant. And you're not the father. Rocked doesn't even begin to describe your world at this moment. I mean, yeah, she assures you she's been totally faithful to you and that the child's from the Holy Spirit, but really? You're supposed to buy that nonsense? You may not be the smartest guy in the neighborhood, but you know it takes two people to get pregnant. That's kind of human reproduction 101. In some ways, her insistence that this was a God thing just makes it all worse. She's using your common faith in God to try and cover for her obvious infidelity. God wouldn't do something like this. He just wouldn't. I mean, okay, sure, he technically could because he's God and do whatever he wants, but you had plans. There are a lot of plot twists you could have handled, but this wasn't one of them. There's no way this wasn't going to define the rest of your life, and not in a way you wanted to, given the dictionary your small town was going to be using. What do we do when we're following God faithfully and life suddenly just flies apart around us? How do we proceed when life veers sharply to the left from out of nowhere? I suspect Joseph was asking some questions very similar to those when Mary delivered the news to him. By right, he could have had her stoned. Yes, the law called for the adulteress and the adulterer both to face such a punishment, but if she wasn't going to fess up as to who it was, then she could face it by herself. But even if he didn't go that particular route, he could have, at the very least, ruined her reputation. I mean, she'd already kind of done that herself, but done that along with her family's just to make sure that she didn't get the chance to drag anybody else through this kind of a mess again. But he'd known Mary. He didn't for a minute buy her story, but there was something about her tearful earnestness that it made him wonder. And the fact was, he loved her. Holding a vindictive grudge, it wasn't his thing. I mean, after all, if God could forgive the people of Israel in the face of their persistent unfaithfulness so many times in the past, surely he could back off from reacting to this at DEFCON 1. Well, that's exactly what Matthew tells us happened in verse 19. And her husband, Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly. Look, it wasn't what he wanted, but he didn't have a choice. She'd taken that from him when she'd done whatever it was she'd done. And yet the plot was about to twist again. Things weren't quite what they'd seemed. Verse 20. But as he considered these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary as your wife, for that which is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. The plot thickens. Mary was telling the truth. Great, but what on earth was Joseph supposed to do with this? I mean, this wasn't some announcement made from the city gates. This was a dream. His dream. Nobody else had this. Sure, he can move forward in light of this truth, but that didn't mean anybody else was going to change their opinions of the whole situation. They were going to think him to be as crazy as her. Good luck to both of them. If that nut job wants to hook himself up with her damaged goods, more power to him. I'm sure not going to take him any of my business. His crazy might be catching. The thing is, Joseph's character ran deeper than that. God wasn't going to let just anybody be responsible for being the earthly father to his son. Or perhaps to put that another way, he wasn't going to put himself in the care of just anybody. He'd chosen incredibly carefully for the scheme he was unfolding in our midst. Joseph was the kind of guy who, once he'd been convinced something was right, he was going to stick with it no matter what seemed to stand in his way. And this was doubly true in the one pointing him to what was right was the angel of the Lord. As a result, when Joseph woke from sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took his wife, but he knew her not until she'd given birth to a son. And he called his name Jesus. In other words, Joseph's life took this incredibly unexpected, difficult left turn. But instead of being completely undone by it, he just went with it. And you could try and argue that your situation, your life's left turn, is harder than what he faced. But think about the picture we've been painting. I mean, your heart may be different from his, but it's not any less hard. After all, the thing Matthew skips over entirely is what Luke reports in his telling of the story. Rather than getting to settle down to a nice little life together, Joseph and Mary have their lives upended by Caesar Augustus's call for everyone to return to their ancestral hometown in order to be registered for a new tax. To make matters worse, a couple years later, they attract the direct and deadly attention of King Herod and have to live as refugees in Egypt for a few years before finally being able to return home and settle down. Wait. So, that's it then? We just go with it? That's not very helpful. No, you're right, it's not. It's also not the whole story of what Joseph did here, though. Look more closely at this with me. When Joseph's life took a sharp left turn, what was it that he did? Well, the first thing he did was to keep moving forward with the same righteous intent he had before the chaos ensued. Think about it. Yes, he was going to divorce Mary. The text says divorced there because even though betrothal wasn't marriage, it was nonetheless a legally binding state of affairs that could only be undone by a divorce certificate. But in light of all the things he could have done in reaction to the news of her pregnancy, I'd say he kept his character of righteousness pretty well intact. You see, Joseph was committed to living a life that was honoring of the Lord. Now, have you ever made that kind of a commitment? I bet you have. But that's not really the question. The question is not whether you've made it, but whether you've held it when life took a sharp left turn on you. You see, it's easy to make a commitment to honor the Lord with your life. Lots of people do that. But then we actually start living life, and things don't go nearly as smoothly as we planned. They sure didn't for Joseph. When life takes a sharp left turn on us, we usually go into panic mode. And in panic mode, we operate with an eye towards survival and tend to run on our backup generators. Well, have you ever tried starting a generator filled with old or bad gas? I have. You can pull that cord all day long, but it's not going to power anything. You can't run on old bad gas. At least, you can't run very well. The thing is, unless we are regularly filling our reserve tanks with good stuff, our life backup generators are going to run on the last stuff we put in them. And depending on how long ago we filled them up, the result of powering them up may not be pretty. Maybe that some old sinful habit you thought had been left long ago in the past becomes the thing you lean on to get you through the chaos instead of the Lord. Holding tightly to a commitment to the Lord when life's ups and downs get pretty intense isn't easy. But it is right. It is good. But holding tightly to his commitment to the Lord wasn't the only thing Joseph did. He also kept his eyes and ears open to what else the Lord might be doing around him. When that dream came, he could have woken up in the morning, shrugged it off as something bad he'd eaten for dinner, and stayed on course with his plans. But he didn't. He was willing to listen. He was willing to obey. Sometimes for us, when life has taken a left turn, we go into survival mode. We get so focused on just making it through the storm that we don't pay any attention to the help and hope that might be springing up around us. We're like the guy in the old joke who gets trapped on his roof by a flood and begins praying for God to send help. Two boats and a helicopter all come by to rescue him, but he turns them all away because he's waiting on God to save him. When he finally drowns and asks God what happened, the Lord responds, "I sent you two boats and a helicopter. What more did you want?" In the thick of life's chaos is not the time to tune God out. It is precisely the time that we need to be the most tuned in to see and hear what God is going to do next. But being able to do this requires something of us. It requires us to have enough perspective to see that even though things may seem to be flying apart around us, and not for reasons of our own sinfulness, they're not out of God's control. They've not veered over into territory that's beyond his ability to redeem. In fact, they haven't necessarily left the path of his plans at all. It's entirely likely that he's up to something very good, but the route to that good will take us through some wild territory that will require us to lean harder than ever into our trust in God's goodness and ability to redeem any circumstances by his grace. But here's the thing. This perspective isn't something we're going to be able to suddenly develop in the moment of crisis. If it's not already in place, we'll grab instead for whatever is the next closest perspective, and that one, by definition, isn't going to be nearly as likely to help us as this one is. You see, people are, we're like tubes of toothpaste. When you squeeze a tube of toothpaste, what is it that comes out of it? Toothpaste. This isn't rocket science. Now for the follow-up question. Why does toothpaste come out of it? Because that's what's in it. Let me know if I need to slow down so you can keep up. Toothpaste comes out of a tube of toothpaste because that's what's in a tube of toothpaste. It's a tube of toothpaste, after all. Well, when life squeezes us, whatever's inside of us is going to come out. The question becomes, what's inside of you? Joseph had built up a store of some good stuff inside of him, such that when life began to squeeze, he was able to respond as he did. How did he do it? Perhaps by immersing himself in a world shaped by the stories of guys like Joseph, Jacob's son, and Daniel, who faced incredibly trying circumstances, and yet God was clearly the one at work behind the scenes pulling the strings on the whole show. If he could do that then he could do it now. And Joseph, like those other guys, could lean into what was right in spite of how crazy a notion that seemed to be. For us, we have the stories of guys like this Joseph, whose hard circumstances were clearly being directed by God, even though he would have had trouble seeing that at the moment. But that's just it. At the moment, it's never easy to see that God is the one directing the apparent chaos when life takes a left turn. We don't lean into him, into what's right, because it's obvious, but because we trust God's record. And let's face it, his record's pretty good. Over and over again in the scriptures, we see him lead his people into messes so thick and deep there's no way they'll ever get out, only to guide them along with his strong, steady hand to an incredible outcome that brings him glory and them joy. We can listen to the stories from the lives of modern followers too. Time and again, Jesus' followers have walked after him into circumstances for which the label difficult seemed far too small to cover it, only to walk out with him on the other side better and stronger than they were before. The sum total of all this points us firmly in this direction. When life takes a left turn, we can join with folks like Mary and Joseph and lean into what's right. When life turns left, lean into what's right. When life turns left, lean in to what's right.